Hello there, welcome to ISB Update. We're going to give you a quick summary of the October 2013 board meeting this month. My name is Chris Welsh, I'm Communications Manager at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined here by Stephen Cooper, who's a member of the ISB, Alan Shearer and Sue Lloyd, who are Senior Technical Directors at the ISB. Without further ado, shall we begin? And Sue, I think you're going to start by taking us through discussions around impairment.
Thanks, Chris. So at the October meeting, the ISB considered the enhancements they would make to the recent exposure draft on accounting for expected credit losses if they were to decide to proceed to finalise the exposure draft. The first thing we talked about was how to make the assessment of when to recognise lifetime expected credit losses, and the board tentatively decided to confirm the proposal in the exposure draft that you should start to recognise lifetime expected credit losses when there's been a significant increase in credit risk since you first recognised the financial instrument. The board also talked about a number of clarifications for how that assessment could be made to try and clarify some of the operational aspects of that assessment, including, for example, the fact that in some cases you might be able to assess the change in credit risk looking at your financial instruments on a portfolio basis. The board also confirmed the proposal in the exposure draft that the assessment of credit risk would be a symmetrical assessment. So if it were the case that you no longer had experienced a significant increase in credit risk, then you'd resume accounting for a 12-month expected credit loss measure. The board then went on to discuss some of the simplifications that had been proposed in the exposure draft. Firstly, the 30 days past due rebuttable presumption, and then the low credit risk operational simplification. And essentially, the board decided that in both cases, those simplifications should be retained with some clarifications. So firstly, on the 30 days past due rebuttable presumption, the board agreed that that was an appropriate way to assess whether there'd been a significant increase in credit risk. We're going to confirm more clearly that that is intended to be a backstop. So we would expect that to be the last point at which an entity would consider a financial instrument to have deteriorated to a point that it should have lifetime expected credit losses measured, rather than the normal point at which that recognition should occur. The board also decided to retain the simplification that if you have a financial instrument which is considered to be low credit risk at the reporting date, that can be considered not to have significantly increased in credit risk, so you don't need to actually assess the change in the credit risk for that instrument. You can just keep it at the 12-month measure. But the board decided to make some improvements to how we describe the low credit risk criteria, and also, rather than that being mandatory, we've made a change so that people can assume that if a financial instrument is low credit risk at the reporting date, that it hasn't significantly increased in credit risk. But that leaves it open for an entity to make a different assessment if they think that's more appropriate. We then went on to discuss some of the measurement aspects of the expected credit loss calculation, and most importantly, we discussed the discount rate that you would use if you're explicitly discounting your shortfalls in cash flows. And the board decided that rather than permitting a range of discount rates, as was proposed in the exposure draft, that entities would be required to use the effective interest rate or an approximation of that. We also discussed how to deal with modifications of contractual cash flows, and essentially the board confirmed the proposals in the exposure draft that if there's a modification of the contractual cash flows, then the carrying amount of the financial assets should be updated for that change. So that was impairment, and we'll continue to discuss the enhancements to the impairment proposals at our November meeting. I'll just touch briefly on accounting for macro hedging as my last point I'm going to cover. We had a very short procedural discussion really on accounting for macro hedging at the October meeting, where the board confirmed that they are happy for the staff to proceed to drafting the discussion paper on accounting for macro hedging, that the necessary due process steps had been completed. The board also agreed that there should be a 180-day comment period for that discussion paper, and an indication was given that we now expect to publish that discussion paper in the first quarter of 2014.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sue. Moving on to Stephen. Revenue recognition, big discussion this month.
Yes, thank you. The revenue project is very much nearing its completion. Three issues have arisen as part of the drafting process that have prompted some ongoing discussion between the two boards and has resulted in some decisions being taken at this meeting, which now hopefully means that the whole thing is completed and we can move towards issuing the final standards. So the three issues were the operation of the constraint on recognising revenue when there's variable consideration, related to that, the implementation guidance related to licences, and then collectability. So if I start off with the constraint, the board decided to clarify the objective of the constraint, which is that you would not recognise revenue where there's a possibility of a significant revenue reversal. But what we've done is effectively specify a confidence level in that was previously missing from the drafting. So we decided to specify the confidence level as being highly probable from the IASB perspective. The board decided that if an entity expects that including some but not all of the estimated amount of variable consideration would not result in a significant revenue reversal, then the entity should include that estimate in the transaction price, and we're adopting this highly probable threshold within that. We also decided that variable consideration would be remeasured each period based upon changes in circumstances. However, we also decided that in respect of sales and usage-based royalties on licenses of intellectual property, that we would have a special application whereby there will be a specific requirement that if the variable consideration is based upon the sales to ultimate customers, then we should not recognize any revenue until those sales actually take place, effectively delaying recognition of the revenue until the uncertainty has been resolved. So that's kind of an exception from the general application in terms of any recognizing variable consideration when a reversal isn't probable. We also went on to discuss licenses and in particular the implementation guidance. We haven't really made any changes to the principle, which involves distinguishing between two types of licenses. Licenses that provide access to the entity's intellectual property. This is where the performance obligation is satisfied over time, and other types of licenses that provide a right to use the intellectual property where we say the performance obligation is satisfied at a point in time. So that basic structure that we've developed previously remains in place, but what we did decide on is further clarity about exactly what we mean by that. Now, a lot of that's really down to the drafting, but the board, I think, is now sort of comfortable, much more comfortable with the clarity of what we're trying to get across there. And then the last thing is collectability. There's been a lot of debate about whether we should recognize any revenue if there is significant amounts of credit risk associated with that transaction. And in the past, we did not have a collectability threshold, but then that raised questions about presentation, whether it should be net or gross on the face of the income statement. In this meeting, the board decided to revert effectively to the collectability threshold that is present in existing accounting. So we have decided to introduce a collectability threshold whereby we would not effectively enter the model unless collectability passes this threshold. The threshold for the IASB is one of probable. So only if it's more likely than not effectively that you believe that collection will take place are you able then to recognize the revenue and measure the consideration appropriately. If you believe that collectability doesn't pass that threshold, then you wouldn't be recognizing any revenue at all. So this is a change, but it's a way of dealing with some of the difficulties that the board got into in terms of the drafting process that we were going through. So with those three things now resolved, and resolved in a converged manner between the two boards, there is no barrier towards us proceeding with the finalisation of the drafting and then the publication of the standard.
Mm. And of course that's likely to be, the actual publication I think makes sure people have expectations. It's going to be in 2014 in the first quarter probably, rather than towards the end of this year. It does take a while for us to go through these balloting processes where the board actually formally votes, and to make sure that we've got a high quality product when it comes out. So it'll be early 2014
for sure. So moving on to some of the more recent additions to our agenda, Alan, Disclosure Initiative.
Yep, thanks Chris. The Disclosure Initiative, one of the things that we're looking at is try to improve the quality of disclosure and financial reports, and a short term part of that initiative is to have a look at some amendments to IAS 1, which is our financial statement presentation standard at the moment. And we're trying to take away some of the barriers to giving a little bit more flexibility to preparers to present high quality reports. We've already had quite a few little proposals put through the board. One we had a look at this time was a little unusual, because it's rather than taking away some of the impediments or changing the language, it was actually looked at the possibility of adding a requirement to do what we call a net debt reconciliation. Historically, in some jurisdictions this has been quite a common feature of annual reports, but it's not been part of IFRS. We had a look at that, but there are some difficulties in introducing a requirement to do a net debt reconciliation. One is, what do we mean by net debt? And we were concerned that if we're going to do this properly, we might need to either define net debt or at least have some parameters around it. Some people said we don't need to define it, but we just need allow people to tell us what they think net debt is. We were a bit worried that this would detract from the other improvements we're making to IS1, so we decided not to put this in as part of this first suite or package of improvements to IS1. We are committed though to having a look at net debt as a matter of priority, because we know investors have been asking us to try and improve the disclosures around debt and net debt, in particular reconciling movements from one period to another. So we don't want to drop this and say, well, we're just not going to do anything for 4 or 5 years or so. We're going to continue to have a look at net debt, do a bit more outreach, with a view to coming back in the shorter term rather than in the long term. What it means is that we have almost completed our set of improvements to IS1, and we plan to put those out for consultation as an exposure draft early in 2014.
Okay, thanks very much. We're also drawing towards the end of the rate regulator activities project, so perhaps you'd like to...
Yeah, well, sort of an end and a beginning. An end to the interim for IFRS, but a beginning of the research phase. Now, I'll go to the interim IFRS to start with. The board has put out an exposure draft proposing that entities that don't currently use IFRS, in other words, people who want to come into IFRS or first-time adopters, would be allowed to continue to recognise and measure regulatory balances. And this is the type of thing in regulated activities, such as particularly in the sectors like power and water and so on, utility supply, where they can be highly regulated. In some jurisdictions, they have been allowed to recognise assets or liabilities associated with those activities. We've had a project previously to try and look and see whether we agree assets and liabilities could be put in place. Because of that project hasn't matured yet, we think it's appropriate to have allow people to continue that treatment, at least in the interim. So we received quite a number of comment letters. Our comment deadline was the 4th of September, and we've had a look at all the feedback we've got from the from comment letters, and the board's decided to go ahead and finalise that interim standard. What's good about that, in my view, is that we think it'll increase comparability, because first-time adopters will establish their opening balances just like any other first-time adopter, and from then on they actually separate out any regulatory impact balances in terms of the balance sheet, and the same with the income statement. And so that means that you'll be able to see the IFRS numbers and the separate regulatory balances and regulatory income or expenses as well, and then we think that'll increase comparability. There were some minor changes as a result of the feedback we received, but I think anybody perhaps can read IFB update and the board papers, and they'll see what those changes were. But we are about to go to the balloting process or the voting process for that for the board in terms of the actual final draft of the IFRS, and we expect to issue that early next year as well. As I said, it's also the beginning where one thing that people asked us to do was not allow an interim project to delay a bigger consideration of regulated activities, and we're planning to put a discussion paper out in 2014. And staff brought back some more papers this time to focusing on a couple of issues to do with rights and obligations as a result of rate regulation, and we're going to continue that in this coming month, in November. Essentially, we're going to have a look and see what sort of regulatory arrangements might satisfy the definitions of assets and liabilities. So we're considering which ones legitimately should be shown in the financial statements as assets and liabilities and related expenses and so on. So we continue that process, and we expect a discussion paper probably about the middle of next year.
Great. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that in the future. I think that is about it for this month. Next board meeting is on the held between 14th and the 22nd of November, again in London. A more comprehensive written update of the discussions of the board in October will be available, as always, on our website, so please do visit that. Before we leave you today, a final reminder that all views expressed during this broadcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect those of the IASB. Thank you very much.